3. Parting of the Ways. What the diplomat's voice spoke of was sharp and cruel, like truth itself.
"It's not a parchment at all," the diplomat hissed, in his peculiar blend of accents, but always in the Valian tongue.
The language was his curse, and he had never spoken it fluently until the wardens had come, first with the knife, then the contracts for him to view, then the parchment as partial payment to the priests of Wall.
"Listen to it. It's a game board, each fragment an empty space, whether filled with words or not, and the rest, all of them, pieces. And fill in the absences with actions of your own for meaning," he laughed. "But you still have to read it, especially the bit on language. The author admits it. Do you think any of this is true? You truly believe there to be some great storehouse of secrets, waiting to be cracked open like a ribcage and let its innards spill out? Such a place, and manned by a lone priest of Wall. How long has that cycle played out, I suppose, in this mythical place?"
He grinned, and his tongue clicked almost independent of its owner, in the Valian gesture of disdain. And 4 times, the unluckiest of numbers in old Adir. The priests did not answer, already regretting their visitation.
"Of course it exists. The game wouldn't be any amusement to the gods if it were not true, would it?"
He laughed and asked the sweating petitioner to read him the chapters again on the killing of gods, and he repeated them to himself in 100 different languages as if a mantra. He did this until the jailers came to take his tongue, and if it was to be believed, give it to another in the hopes of a different answer that never came. What is meant to be kept is lost. On the day after Auster struck Tarnish, Auster returned to the larder, and Tarnish was not there. He stood, silent, numb. He had lost his only chance to tell the boy the hate was not for him, but it didn't matter, for Tarnish already knew, and it had not stopped Auster's fist. It would not stop it again. When Auster returned, the larder was empty, the alcove was empty. The troll skin and the urn, still overturned, were no witness to what had happened. There were no snapped vines, no prints in the soil, no shreds of robe speaking to where he had gone, not even a body. As he entered the larder, Auster's robes flared with light, and finding the alcove empty, all of his eyes awoke, raking the room. But the boy who was supposed to illuminate him was now gone. Though disbelieving in the god he cursed, Auster spat hate Wall's way. Then, after one last glance at the room, he rushed to the exit and screamed Tarnish's name, begging in a way that sounded false, with words that felt hollow. His prized possession had slipped away, and worse, he knew not how or where he had gone.
"The troll skin rug. Of what use is a skinned troll? It actually has more possibilities than one might think, if one isn't too frightened of a minor troll being born from the skin. An old crone's tale. The creature popping into life like a toadstool does, erupting with a flurry of spores into the world. Sometimes it lives as one might expect, pantomiming the life of the one it grew from with no more intelligence than a cluster of vines. Other times it lives, but in a different way, releasing its spores and letting them be carried to a new one to serve as a host. The nature of such children is the Fey way, but at least they are less prone to curses of the human world. A troll skin is large and double the height of a man, more than enough for a small boy to slip beneath and pretend to be one with the earth beneath it."
Troll skin rug. +50% to hide in appropriate circumstances, but same attempt of attracting trolls is also present. and also lingers more persistently if you hide within it. And unknown also can provide invisibility to trolls, as long as the player does not make any sudden motions. What is meant to be kept slips free. On the day after Auster struck Tarnish, he returned and fled almost as quickly as he came. Tarnish could hear him as he scoured the room with his magic, spitting commands and burning sorceries, as the eyes on his robe awoke with a blinding light he could not see, the swish of his robes as he whirled to every corner of the room, sounding to all the world like sails whipping in a storm, and then, finally, the calling out, the false calling out like hooks. Tarnish remained silent. When the cries had barely faded, Tarnish crawled from beneath the troll skin blanketing the floor, his shape one of the many hills that blanketed the floor. He crept quietly to the passage where Auster faintly called, and this time the passage did not block him where it had before. Auster had not sealed it behind him. Had he? Tarnish still felt as if reeling from the blow. His vision was blurred, sometimes doubled, and looking at the walls and galleries made him dizzy. But the route was clear. The troll skin had parted easily for him when he had sought shelter beneath it, the long hours of boredom bearing fruit. He had still been able to breathe, though the smell had been rank indeed, but a small price to pay. In truth, he had not been sure the troll skin would conceal him. It would have been one of the first places Auster would have looked, should have looked. Of that he was certain. The man was rife with madness and theological obsessions, but he was a fool to overlook something so obvious. Or maybe it wasn't. His vision blurred again. The idea that Auster would not have considered such a hiding place confused him. Perhaps he did not see the skin as the covering that it was. Or he did not consider the mounds and hills like a graveyard, but solid through and through. Whatever worked in his favor that day, he did not know.
On the vestment of 98 eyes.
Vestment of 98 eyes. The command word that causes the eyes to ignite into radiance, unknown to many, is a false light, blinding not just others, but the perceptions of the wearer itself, depending on how many eyes are opened at once. The blindness for the wearer depends on what they are viewing, with the following effects. For every eye that is opened, any item forgotten or purposely hidden has its chance of being spotted reduced by 1%. If a warden had misplaced his keys, the eyes would assist in their recovery, but he would be partially blinded to the coin that accidentally fell beneath his chair. Although, to be fair, this is only an example, as the priests of Wall do not have wardens and prisons and keys. Or so they say. The same is true for spotting tracks of those who wish to stay hidden and secret doors, as well as the means of opening them. For every eye that is opened, any person hiding within the field of view also has a bonus to stealth. When attempting to decipher the meaning and intent of a passage, scroll, or other written work, the chance of misunderstanding or missing the meaning of the work carries the same percentage penalty above. This has led to some extremely dangerous rhetoric, interpretations, and the misunderstanding of an activation word with explosive effects. Either way, he did not question his fortune. He had escaped notice, and he thanked Wall. But for exactly what, he did not know. Which felt in keeping with mysteries. He was free, for the moment. He had no faith that it would last, and he had very little time. He followed the corridors of the house upwards, looking for familiar shapes, that now twisted in his vision. Behind him, Andra's urn lay toppled, as if a sign of things to come. As the wizard sees it,
"It's not a parchment at all!"
The bone-blackened wizard roared, the thick, pig-fat symbols bedecking his face, sweating into new patterns as his frustration erupted.
"It's a grimoire, made by a fool who doesn't know what it is for. You see the tears, the folds. They are meant to channel, not communicate."
he barked, his way of laughing.
This isn't something to be read! This!
His lips split, his bright red gums carrying the shine of wax. False teeth.
This is for souls to be channeled through.
But what of the map? One of the priests insisted. Look. He displayed the crumpled forefront of the scroll for the wizard, whose lips slithered closed in thought. It is telling the spirits where to go. The wizard barked again, his head lolling back. The wicked sat beside him on its haunches, silent, its black eyes watching the scroll, and the fingers darting on its surface, hungry.
If that is a map, then the place it shows is not a place at all, not in truth. Such a place would be a grimoire, one of the largest I've seen, and as large as it is, it would be useless. So big only a god could hope to carry it, I think,
he barked.
Unless you made the symbols move, perhaps. And what a dance it would be!
Move? The priest inquired, starting to regret the visit as he had with the diplomat. And how would the symbols move? Did the keeper take them? The boy? Which? The wizard seemed stunned for a moment, as if a new possibility occurred to him, and he squinted at the parchment. Behind him, the wicked boy sniffed, growled.
Why, neither. It's not men to blame. Often they just get in the way. Secrets are the ones you need to watch out for, and they watch out for their own. They always seek to slip free. Let their power be known.
The wizard threw a taunting glance at the priest.
But you know that now, don't you?
He grinned.
No house built by god or man is ever built to last. And certainly not all the ones you think are hidden.
His eyes sought every corner except the god's walk. Tarnish knew it was the first place that Ouster would go, fearing the loss of his most precious weapons, his most precious secrets, or so he hoped. Thinking in opposites, he went to the places Ouster would not go, and duty came first. Besides, there was one route that led down, and that made the choice easier. His robes swept out behind him as he sought the antechamber, the route strangely clear to his eyes. Either minutes or hours, he emerged into the antechamber where the mist clung to the floor. Somewhere in its embrace must be the scroll. When Ouster stepped from the wall, in his hands he held the cylinder.
It was not hard. Is this your key?
He corrected. Tarnish's eyes locked on the scroll, his lips a thin line, beaten.
Is this what you brought here? How you bought your way in?
He held it out.
Come on, it's yours.
He proffered it like a bone.
We can leave together. I'll follow.
Tarnish didn't move. Truth's unsure footing.
Look, the two of us, we can find a way out of here. We don't need to take everything. Take only a few of these, seed them out beyond walls' clutches, expose him, expose all the gods, and...
Tarnish's face was stone, and it answered him.
Do you even know what wall is? Wall plays...
Wall is many things, Tarnish caught himself saying. His body remained relaxed, and he simply spoke. The words carried no weight, and he gave the answer he knew that Ouster, that any sad heretic, wished to hear. He is a cheat, a deceiver, the giver of secrets, only to take them away, or give birth to more. He plays a shell game with the lives of all of us. That is what he is. Ouster smiled grimly, nodded. To you, the boy added, cold. Ouster's nod froze and his eyes narrowed, studying the boy as if trying to wrap his head around unfamiliar defiance. "But I don't care what Wall is," Tarnish said. "I care what you are, who you are, why you are here. Or I did. I found the real keeper," Tarnish guessed, the words tumbling out, and watched Ouster's eyes, and caught them as they darted to the pit. He began to walk toward him, but Ouster held his ground, his eyes seeming to watch the boy.
"You killed him."
Tarnish wasn't angry.
"Cast the body into the pit where you didn't think it would ever be found. It's why your robes don't fit. It's why you don't fit. Not here. But it is also the way out, you know,"
Tarnish continued.
"But when you kept me from falling before, you did it partly so I wouldn't find the corpse. You may hold the key,"
he nodded at the scroll,
"but you don't know how to use it. I'm going to give you a chance. I'll tell you how the key works, and in return, everything else of Wall's remains here."
Ouster studied him.
"You trust me? After all this?"
Tarnish nodded.
"You smell of it still," he lied. "You can't have shaken off the effect so soon."
Ouster smiled and his hand lowered, holding at the scroll.
"Show me."
Tarnish walked steadily toward Ouster, his hand outstretched. As he neared, Ouster braced himself, planting his feet, and Tarnish pretended to ignore it. As they closed, Ouster took a breath, about to whisper the eyes to open, his hand ready to lash out. And Tarnish knocked the scroll from his hand, letting it tumble into the pit as the robe flashed to life. Ouster howled, and Tarnish ducked. The scroll case sailed over the pit and fell, and so did Ouster, his hands clutching at it, howling. His brightly lit form seemed to blaze over the pit, yet somehow, impossibly, he caught it, and tottered on the edge, his footing unsure, then it steadied just enough, and Tarnish struck, shoving him as hard as he could, uncaring of the scroll, uncaring of Ouster's descent. Ouster caught himself, his free hand on the lip of the pit, gripping it tightly. In his other hand, he held the scroll as tight. Tarnish looked down on him coldly from the edge of the pit.
"All you need to do is hold the scroll and fall,"
Tarnish said quietly.
"Wall will put you on the path. Where you cast the keeper after you killed him, that is where you must go."
Ouster paused, then his face wrinkled into a smile that seemed foul now to his eyes.
"The keeper?"
He paused as Tarnish glared at him. Ouster's brows drew together. His mouth gaped with realization.
"I didn't kill him. I didn't."
"Tell it to his face, then."
Tarnish kicked him. Ouster fell. The eyes blazed as he spiraled to the bottom, the robes flapping as he fell, then winked out, one by one, like jewels vanishing into the depths. And Ouster was gone. Tarnish waited for what felt like an hour, then sat by the edge, waiting. He had time. No sounds came from the pit. And if the eyes still blazed, they were far past his sight. He was alone. Which is what he realized that he wanted. The house had a new keeper, and the others had been delivered to Wall in their own way, with secrets intact. Most of them. For as Ouster had fallen, Tarnish had caught the wine on his breath. And with that, another mystery. One that could wait. Tarnish, keeper of the House of Wall, set out to explore his new home.
The first of endings. There are many more endings to the scroll, a new one unfurling each time. One speculates on how Ouster must have escaped, or at least the scroll did. Did he know how to re-enter the house? Does he live? is the scroll the means to open it again? And other endings are even stranger. How when Tarnish returned to the larder, he found Andra's scorn gone, and with it any hope of using its waters, or its reflection. Whether it had vanished or someone else had known how to leave, and they had left Tarnish there. Whatever the end of the tale, it likely still waits for both ends, Ouster and Tarnish to meet again, a pair of rods upon which a common scroll connects the two.